गुरुर्ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुर्देवो महेश्वर गुरुर्साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। गुरुर्मध्ये स्थिता माता मातृमध्ये स्थितो गुरु गुरुर्माता नमस्तेस्तु मातृगुरु नमाम्यहम् मातृगुरु नमाम्यहम्। We have been talking about meditation for the past couple of sessions, and sometimes it's difficult to keep the continuity when the time lapses between the two talks because the context sometimes gets lost. But we'll try and summarize some of the basic points from past so that we can conclude the understanding of what meditation is. So we talked about what is meditation, what meditation is not, why meditate, who should meditate, what is the purpose of meditation. We'll basically touch base on all of those things. But before I do that, I want to share with you some of the thoughts and teachings of Bhagavan Buddha that will make you think as we together explore what is meditation. Sometimes we have preconceived ideas, we have preconceived notions, we have been reading, we have been listening, we have been observing different people practice so-called meditation, and there is no common thread. And if meditation is what it is supposed to be, then it should be same for everybody. It should be the same for all individuals. It should be same whether you speak the language or not. It should be same whether you understand spirituality or not. It should be the same whether you are learned or not. It should be the same whether you're eloquent in explaining it or not. Regardless of who you are, where you are, it should be universal, because it makes no sense for it to be available or it to be given to privileged few if it is what it is supposed to be, which is to be one with yourself. So I'm going to share with you some of Buddha's teaching and have you question the preconceived ideas and dogmas that we have grown up with. In meditation, people close their eyes. They believe that to meditate, they must isolate themselves from external world. Thus, sitting in meditation for a few minutes or even several hours give you nirvana? Isn't nirvana the embracing of all things, not the running away from everything? The meditator is trained to think of nothing. The thought of no thought is still a thought. You see the controversy, you see the problem in conventional teachings that we have been given. And part of the problem lies with the language itself, the semantics itself. Because there is a difference between learned knowledge and experienced knowledge. That which is experienced cannot be taught. By the time you teach it, it gets lost into the inadequacies of human mind, inadequacies of human preconceptions, inadequacies of language, incompleteness, inadequacies of understanding capacity and the explaining capacity of the person who is doing the explaining and person who is trying to learn. So there are so many barriers that interfere with the transference of knowledge. And that's why it is said that true master is not he who shows you God, but who gives you the candle in your hand so you can find your own God within you. And that's what Kabirji says, that when you understand who you are, then there is no difference between the true master and the God. So every single thing that we are taught has, we need to understand that it is not the absolute truth. Everything is a map. Map is not the destination. And so we have to make the journey ourselves to experience it for ourselves. And once you experience it, you don't need the map anymore. You don't need the technical knowledge anymore. You don't need to know what water is or what the composition is or what it tastes like. Once you taste it, your thirst is quenched and nothing else matters. Meditation separates you from enlightenment. Look at the controversial statement. Meditation separates you from enlightenment. Why? Because meditation makes you think that you are doing something, which will equal something else, meaning realization. Doing something never equals nirvana. Nirvana is only known in the non-doing. It is known by being. This is the greatest illusion of meditation, trapping you into the doing, keeping you from undoing. Undo, be, and you shall reach nirvana. Rock sits quietly and does not move, nor does it do anything. Is rock enlightened? Nirvana is gained by teaching your body to sit for a long periods of time. Nirvana is not gained by teaching your body to sit for long periods of time in some uncomfortable meditative posture. The practice only teaches you discipline of sitting. Physical and mental discipline is good because it allows you to maintain precise control over your material, tangible life. But physical and mental discipline does not equal nirvana. Only a disciplined body and mind is achieved. Nirvana comes naturally. Allow it to enter you from where you are right now. The person sits down to meditate and becomes frustrated because they cannot stop their thoughts. They are certain that everyone around them is obviously much more holy, lost deeply in meditation. Meditation is designed to calm your mind, not to make it more disrupted. Relax into your own being. Be who you are. Be what you are. Allow your mind to be silent, and you will not need to chase this silence in formal meditation. Zen is about being, not becoming. Life becomes a non-stop series of habitual reenactments of previous experiences. Why? Because they are known. Known, therefore nothing is new. With nothing new, no uncharted emotions or experiences must take place. Meditation becomes a habitual experience. A habitual experience, after the initial stages of its mental focusing have been achieved, nothing new is gained from it. There is a reason that people meditate for a lifetime but do not achieve realization. They lock themselves into the limited experience which they have mastered. Meditation is not to be habitual. It can be new each time you experience it. There is a saying in the Western world that practice makes perfect, which is the biggest fallacy. If you learn how to swing the tennis racket wrong, you will become very good at swinging it wrong by doing it over and over and over and over. Practice does not make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. Do you allow it to be new? Do you allow yourself to encounter new experiences behind walls of meditation? Life is your choice. Meditation is your choice. Do with it what you will. Nirvana is not an I, capital I, subject. This is why so many people throughout the centuries have sought after it but have not obtained its bliss. You cannot want nirvana. That's a desire. You cannot choose to pursue nirvana. That is working towards unattainable. You cannot deserve nirvana. That's egotism. You cannot demand nirvana. That is lust. Nirvana is when you are not. Choose to be and become nirvana. So here are some thoughts that makes you think outside the box, that makes you wonder, what is it that we are doing that we call meditation, and why doing something over and over doesn't bring us peace? Doing something in a repeated manner, whether it is going to the temple, reading a book, doing austerities, or doing mala, or repeating a name, whatever it may be, why do we do it lifetime after lifetime? Yet, at the end of the journey, we are still where we started. As Kabirji used to say, Ghanchina Baladijam. As the ox that peels the seed of cotton to make oil, they make the ox go round and round. The ox think it is moving because it's got the blinders on. And the stone that's attached to it grinds the seeds and squeezes the oil out of it. One day, you know, they put bell around the ox's neck so that the person who is doing the work, they can do other work and still know that the ox is moving and it's not just standing there. So one person just came to this house and said, how do you know that the ox is not going to just stand there and move the neck, making you think that you're moving? So he said, he's an ox, he's not a human. So we do things, we find shortcuts. Even if we have to take the, squeeze the oil out of the seed, we will find ways to not work and say that we did something. If we can buy nirvana, okay, we have to reflect honestly. We can't be egotistical and say, we have done this and therefore everything is fine. We have to examine ourselves honestly. And honesty is what brings us to re-evaluate and reassess. If we ask ourselves, if you had a choice of buying nirvana, how many of you would do that? Okay? We do that all the time. How many times we give donation and expect something in return? Okay, even if we don't expect something in return right now and then, we expect that if my this life is not, if I don't get something in this lifetime, my next lifetime will be better. We are always buying things. Even when it comes to spirituality, we are trying to buy spirituality. So the question comes, where does meditation come into this role? Where does that play a part? Where do we go from here? That if we, I have come to the temple on a, you know, on a weekly basis, if I have listened to satsang on a weekly basis, I have read the scriptures on a weekly basis, I have given donations over and over all my life, and I have accumulated all this punya, why am I still who I was 10 years ago, 50 years ago? Why do I still get distressed when I'm dealt, when I'm faced with problems in my life? So there is something missing. There's an equation that's incomplete that we need to explore. And the only way to explore this is by first understanding the concept that if I keep doing this thing over and over, and if I'm not achieving what I expected I will achieve, then it goes to prove that what I was doing was wrong. Or the premise with which I started it was wrong. That what I did had a different purpose. It was not there to find me peace. It was not there to find me nirvana. It was not there to find me realization. It was there for social reasons. And that's okay too. There is nothing wrong with it. As long as we expect what we are supposed to expect. If you plant a peach seed and you expect a peach, that's fine. If the peach comes out deformed or bad or good, that's all okay. But if you keep planting the peach seed and expect the mango, then you got problem. So as long as we start out with the basic premise that's correct, that everything we do here that's external is social. It is necessary because it maintains the society, it maintains the livelihood of culture, it maintains the cohesiveness of a unit called our society. It is there to attract people and young generation, to guide them in the right direction of where we come from. There is a role for it. But it is not there to give you nirvana. It is not there to give you realization. As long as we understand the principle, then it's okay to do everything we are doing. But then, question comes, what are we going to do for ourselves? What are we going to do to make our spiritual growth alongside? While we do this service, what am I going to do alongside? And we will see at the end that they are not different. It is the attitude with which we do what we were already doing that makes all the difference. You don't have to do anything different. In Gita, Krishna says to Arjun, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yuddhacha. O Arjun, every single moment of life, do what you are doing, yet keep me at the center of your attention. That's all it takes, is where are you focused when you are doing things? Are you focused on your body? Are you focused on your mind? Are you focused on your intelligence? Or are you focused on your spirit? That's all it takes. It is who is in command. As long as there is a doership, as long as it is I who is doing it. Remember, meditation is not an I concept. As long as it is I who is doing the meditation, it will keep you from reaching the realization. Because now it becomes an ego's accomplishment. It is not something to be accomplished. The reason we never find it is because we never lost it. So let's go on and see what else that we have talked about before that we can summarize. So what is meditation? Meditation is not concentration, because concentration requires presence of mind, and meditation is beyond mind. Meditation is observation. It is not observation through mind, but it is observation of mind. When you start to observe your mind, now you start to get the glimpse that you are beyond mind. What is it that gives mind its energy to function? What is it that gives the mind to think? What is it that gives the mind the capacity to analyze? There is something behind it that does that. And when you start to observe the thoughts, and what is mind? Nothing but thoughts in motion. So once you start to observe your thoughts in motion, now you start to see that you are not the thought. Who is the thinker behind the thought? Where are they originating from? Where are they coming from? They are coming from somewhere, going somewhere. They have a transient lifespan. And if you notice it, that they are 99% of them are the same ones that you had yesterday. And that's why there is no growth. So now you start to see suddenly the thoughts passing by. As you see the thoughts passing by, you suddenly stop chasing them. As you realize that you're not the thought. And you don't have to chase them. And you have a choice. And once you stop chasing them, you start to see that it starts to slow down. And as long as it gets energy by you chasing it, it gets momentum. And when you stop chasing it, suddenly this passing thought starts to slow down. And between the thoughts, you start to experience the emptiness, the quietness, the tranquility, the peace. And that's when you realize who you are. That's when you start to get the glimpse of where the mind is getting its energy to function. There's a Chinese proverb that says, it is not the cage that holds the lion. It is not the bars of the cage that holds the lion, but it is the space between the bars that holds the lion in the cage. You can have all the bars you want, but they are 10 feet apart, it's not going to hold the lion in the cage. But if you put them close to each other, then same bars now will hold the lion. So it's the space that matters, not the bars. Lao Tzu said, the vessel that we make out of dust and the clay, that vessel is not what's important. It's the space inside the vessel that's important. There is an exercise in the Vedic teaching that is given to a student in the earlier stages of this Vedic teaching, where a master will hold up a pen in his hand and will ask the student, what do you see? And student will say, I see the pen. He says, you see the pen. Do you see the hand that's holding the pen? He says, oh yeah, now that you point it out, I saw it, but I never paid attention to it. I see the hand that's holding the pen. He says, do you see the body that's connected to the hand that's holding the pen? He says, oh yeah, yeah, now that you mention it, now I'm better aware that there is a body that's holding the arm, that's holding the pen that I see. He says, do you see the space in which the body fits that has the arm that holds the pen? He says, now I see. I didn't before. And still when you tell me, it's hard for me to see the space because I'm so used to seeing tangibles. I'm not used to seeing something that is untangible. But now that you have opened my eyes, now I will practice and I will learn to see the space every time I see something. I will learn to see the roots every time I see the fruit that's connected to the branch, that's connected to the trunk, that's connected to the root. I will learn to see the earth that holds the root, that holds the trunk, that holds the tree, that holds the branch, that holds the fruit. And within which lies the seed. And I will see the seed that holds everything else. I will learn to cultivate that vision. So meditation is not concentration. Meditation is observation. So then, if meditation is not something that we need to do, then how does meditation happen? Because we said that if it is something we do, it can't get us any further than where we are. It's like the painting that Picasso made can never be bigger than Picasso. He can always make a better painting. So the object of our creation, which also goes to the next statement I'm going to make, which bothers many people, is that the statues that we make of God can never get us to God. It is there for a reason. It allows us to focus on a concrete because it is hard for us to focus on formless. So it is a necessary part of our journey. But there must come a time when we go from the grade 1 to grade 2, to grade 3, to grade 4, eventual point of graduation. If we stay in grade 1, then we have deprived ourselves of spiritual growth. And we have to understand that concept, that it is necessary, yet understand that the statues that we make as human beings, which is our creation, how can that be bigger than who we are? We can always create something bigger, and we can always create something better. It goes fundamentally against everything that we have learned from childhood. But there must come a point in time when we question the dogma. When we must question, we understand, and yes, I see a point of it, I see a need for it. But there must come a point when I say, what am I going to do so that I go beyond it? Once you have, and the irony of it is, that once you have reached there, and once you have seen the infinite wisdom, the infinite intelligence, and the infinite spirit that pervades each and every thing, now, when you see the each and every item, suddenly you never have a greater reverence for it. But now you see for what it is. Not just an external value that you have forcibly instilled upon it. Now you experience it. See, there is a difference between... Here's what happened. Guru Nanak, when he sat in meditation and he experienced his spirit, he had Atma Sakshatkar, he had self-realization, he exclaimed, Vaheguru. He explained, oh Master, you give me this? What did I do to deserve this? You introduced me to the God within. How can I ever repay what I learned from you? So people around him, the disciples around him, saw that here is a man who has a light emanating from him, and he is constantly uttering, Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru. So everybody started repeating, Vaheguru, 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 hoping that repeating that mantra will get them to the state of experience that Nanak experienced. This was an expression of his experience. The following the expression cannot lead you to the experience. It doesn't go in reverse. So we have to find a way to experience that truth within ourselves. Then every expression we do. Kabirji says, wherever I sleep, that's my Dandavat Pranam. Wherever I go around, that's my Pradakshina. When I weave my cloth, it is the service of the God. Whatever I do now, since I have realized the God within me, everything I do is the God service. I don't have to go to temple anymore. I don't have to go to mosque anymore. If I go, fine. If I don't go, that's fine. Now suddenly the attitude changes. Now whatever you do, comes with reverence behind it.
Now, each time you said in the womb, it said, I have seen the heaven. It didn't say it's finished. It says, heaven is within you.
Yes.
How you look, it's a gift.
Yes.
It says, you saw that yesterday.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting movie. And it's in the child says, I have seen the heaven. And everybody says, reverence, I say. So why is it in heaven? What is heaven? What is heaven? Everybody asking in a tricky way. And he says, everybody's happy in heaven. Everybody's smiling. Just smiling, we are in heaven. You know, like that. You know.
Yeah. Everything that we have, all the scriptures we have, all the examples we have, all the stories we have, they all basically represent the internal depiction of our human body. You may have heard a story that when Krishna was small, he's playing outside. And Yashoda is watching him, and he suddenly takes a handful of dirt and eats the dirt. And so Yashoda runs to him and says, open your mouth, I just saw you put dirt in your mouth. He says, no you didn't. She says, I did, open your mouth. And he opens his mouth and she sees universe in his mouth. This is an example, it's a parable to explain to us that there is a universe within us. There is an inner space. And when we sit in meditation, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. When we sit in meditation, how to experience that universal consciousness. And that's when we learn to get in touch. And that's what the great rishis exclaim when they say, I'm Brahmasmi. I am the Brahman. It wasn't the egotistical statement. It was a statement of exclamation that they experience within their meditative state. Brahma, actually, the word Brahma comes from the root word Brahman, which comes that which is ever expanding. That's why the universe in Sanskrit language is called Brahmanda. It is it's the same theory as you, if you want to call it the Big Bang theory, where there was everything was in a singularity energy, then eventually the matter formed, and the matter is ever expanding, and eventually when the gravitational force overpowers the initial force of the energy that separates the matter, will involute back on itself and become one. Now that calculated number by astronomy is about 40 billion years, which is exactly what's calculated in the scripture as one day and one night of Brahma. So there is a correlation of this calculation, and there was no scientific method to prove these things before. This was all experiential knowledge that the masters experienced within their meditative state. So yes, everything is within. Everything that we see is inside. We'll see that in a second.
A true story? Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Very well. Maybe someday we will talk about the movie Matrix. The first part. It is exactly this is. The two brothers that made it, Wachowski brothers, actually studied the ancient Indian Vedic literature, and it is based on that principle. Even though it's made as a science fiction, if we look at it step by step, if we analyze it step by step, it sometimes the depiction makes much more sense in allowing us to understand the science of spirituality. Yes. Okay, so now let's talk about what should we do when we meditate. A few minutes. What should we do when we meditate? If the meditation is something that is not done because it is not an I subject or I am doing subject, then why is it necessary to do certain things? And when we do it, what exactly do we do? And what does it accomplish? What is the goal of it? What is the purpose of it? Because you don't want to plant peach seed and expect mangoes. You need to have a goal and say, here is what the purpose of it is. And it's a necessity that I'm going to go through. until I reach the state where I need to reach. So if I have to give you a better example, that you can't graduate high school by not going to high school. You can't graduate high school by going to high school. There must something else occur in between. Going or not going has nothing to do with graduating high school. Even after going to the high school, you need to understand that just being there and showing up there doesn't make you graduate. You have to study, you have to understand the subject, you have to pass the exam, and you have to understand that high school is not the end of things, that there is more to life than just finishing high school. So as long as you understand the utility of it, it is okay to go. You don't want to not go either. You want to go, but there is a utility that you need to understand. You need to understand the confines and the parameters of it. So meditation has four aspects. And these four aspects are described in many different ways in the spiritual world. First part is the name of God. If you look at even Bible, St. John's chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "In the beginning was the Word," W-O-R-D. "The Word was with God, and the Word was God." We call it Nad Brahma, we call it Akshar Brahma, we call it Shabda Brahma, whatever you want to call it. It's a vibration. It is not the word that you can put into the language, because the language came after human beings came, and this vibration has been primordial vibration that has been around before human beings ever existed. Number two, our breath is the only thing that ties us with the universe. It is called the breath of life. In the Bible also it says, God created man from the dust of the earth. Then he breathed in his nostril the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Now the word soul comes in. After the breath of life is put into the dead flesh. And I'll give you a scientific reason why it is the breath that ties us. And there is a reason why we need to pay attention on breath, because it is the primary focal point of meditative process, to allow the mind to rest. When we breathe in, we are breathing in the air, which is combination of oxygen, nitrogen, carbon dioxide, and other rare gases. The carbon dioxide is taken up by the plants on our planet. In the presence of sun, remember, sun, the light, the catalyst. Catalyst meaning that which is necessary to propagate the reaction, but does not participate in the reaction, does not get changed in the reaction, does not get altered in the reaction, does not become less in the reaction. It was, it is, and it always will be the same as it is. Purnamadha, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamaduchyate. That is always complete. You take away complete from the complete, remains complete. You add complete to the complete, remains complete. That is the description of Brahman. So the light, the sun, is a catalyst which is necessary for the plants to convert the carbon dioxide we breathe out, which is carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen, and convert it to oxygen. This oxygen we breathe, along with the plant we eat, the metabolic processes occur, forms our flesh, proteins, and everything is our carbon based. So we are getting the carbon from the plant, we are getting the oxygen from the air, we are drinking water from the earth. All of that combines, and the carbon based molecules that we need in the body are formed. What is not used or what is left over is eliminated as carbon. It gets recycled back into the plant, which gets re-ingested by other beings and animals at different times. Earth rotates. The air, the envelope of air on top of the earth, also rotates, but not at the same speed. Because Earth rotates faster, the air on top of it rotates slower because it is not bound to the Earth. There is a frictional force that draws the air, so the lower layer of air rotates faster with the Earth. The upper layer of air doesn't rotate faster. So the air that is on top of us will eventually be on top of China and India. So the carbon dioxide that we breathe out now will be part of plants in India and China, will be incorporated into the plant material, will be eaten by people over there at a different time, will become part of who they are in their body, and then they will exhale carbon dioxide and the cycle continues. Which means, now they have done this experiment by carbon dating. Radioactive carbon has been analyzed, so this is a proven fact. This is not something that I'm making up. Which means that you and I have the same atoms that were once part of Rama, once part of Krishna, once part of Mahavir, and once part of Hitler. We physically are all one. It's not just a spiritual concept anymore. We are all one. So there is one universal entity that ties everything together. And that's the breath. Now, so the breath of life now becomes the central focal point of meditation. Because it allows us to focus on things that unite us, not separate us, which all religions do. I'm a Christian, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Jain, I'm a Muslim. It separates us from who we are in one spirit. The breath of life, meditation, is no different from anybody. It ties us together. And we talked about an example last time, how to do this, that by allowing your focus to be on the breath as it goes in and out, constantly the racing thoughts tire out. And these tiring thoughts slow down once you stop chasing them. And once they slow down, then you start to see and observe the emptiness, the space between the two thoughts. So the first is the name of God, breath of life, which are all tied together. Here is one more interesting fact. Why do we do rosary? It is an external depiction of our internal breath. Rosary typically, or mala typically, has 108 beads. And you never cross that main bead. This is the explanation of how to spin the rosary. Okay? You go one way, and then you turn it around and go the other way, 108. How did the number 108 come from? In a 24 hour, we have number of breaths. Half of them go up, 10,800 that are taken in, 10,800 are taken out. You drop the two zeros, there is your 108. And it is not a cyclical. It is in and then reversed out. So the external rosary is a depiction of the rosary of breath. So the focus eventually from outside must turn to inside. Now, in Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna that he who remembers me at the time when the spirit separates from the body will inevitably reach me. Because that is his final destination and goal and focus. We don't know when we are going to die. We don't know when that separation is going to occur. What if it is in the ICU, tied to tubes? You're not going to have rosary in your hands. You're not going to have scriptures in your hands. You may not even be able to talk. What if you're in a car accident? The only thing that is with you, that is never without you, is your breath. So the focus of meditation has always been your breath. Third, celestial sound, the music of the spheres. There is a music that is inside of us. There is a sound that is inside of us. That's depicted by many other deities, the damru of Shiva, the flute of Krishna. No matter where you look at it, this is what it is meant to represent. When you close your ears in the meditative state, you hear this sound within you. When you close your eyes, you see the next thing, which is the light within you. When the senses are diverted inward from the outside, you start to experience the infinite universe that's within you. There is a musical concert that goes on inside. There is a light, self-effulgent light, without any wick or without any source, that is constantly there everywhere without a source of its powering it. And the last is the nectar of God. If you turn your tongue inward and then point it to the back of the palate, it is called Khechari Mudra, which is one of the meditative postures. You will taste the juices that drip from the top of your head. These juices allow the saints who meditated for days and days and weeks to survive without food and water. It is called the nectar of life. These are the steps described in the scriptures for meditation. However, only thing that matters, only one that has been considered the focal point of all of this, is the breath of life, where one must isolate themselves in the beginning, because our mind is so active, our mind is so agitated, our senses are constantly being taught and programmed to run outward. To prevent that from happening, to prevent us from escaping in the external world, since the hardest thing for a human being to be with themselves. And that's why the weekend comes and we don't have anything to do. Either we go around in the mall, either we turn the TV on, or if we are more righteous, we run to the temple of the social events and find other people's company, because we are unable to spend time with ourselves. The solitude. Because suddenly we start to face our own demons. And he who learns how to deal with his own demons, he who learns how to sit quietly with his own self, suddenly realizes that it's an addictive process. Because suddenly they go past it. We never go past it because we never sit in front of it. So there must come a time in our lives when we must simultaneously, while doing all of these things, must find a way to search within ourselves. Who are we? Why am I not at peace in spite of doing the same thing, living the right life, coming to the temple, reading the scriptures, listening to the satsang over and over and over and over? Why can I not find peace within? What can I do to reach there? How can I find out who I am? And our basic nature is peace. It's not agitation. The agitation is the facade, is the external walls that we have created.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti. shanti shanti. Any questions?
So connection to day.
Yeah.
You know the Buddha show? Huh. Very beautiful. They come. And they said at the end now, because the Buddha went for the meditation for 6 years.
Yeah.
He didn't achieve anything.
No.
He was looking for outside enlightenment, enlightenment, and then finally got tired. And then the one day he said, that this is not the way you can take yourself and die, that you see are achieving in your life. That's not the right way. How to achieve is to take out the demon. So then the demon comes, and what is the demon? Told man, Maya, no. Can you see everybody? Yeah, that's the way. And that's the way. If you dictate with all these demons, and then they are showing all these things, that then you ultimately reach.
See, scientific version of it, which sometimes will make more sense, because we are all living in the modern world, and we need some sort of a tangible science. Sometimes the ancient words are just words, and they don't really compute. Krodh, Maya, Lobh. We repeat it over and over, but they don't really mean anything. Be honest. Totally doesn't mean anything to me. Okay. So I'm going to give you a practical pointer. Okay. See if this makes sense. We as human beings are constantly living in the past or in the future.
Right.
Just follow with me, okay, the logic. Past meaning whatever I have accumulated, the house, the car, the family, the status, the position, whatever I have, I want to keep it. I want to hold on to it. Okay, which is what we call in this country estate planning. I want to keep everything I have so that the Uncle Sam doesn't take it and it grows. In a compounded interest. Okay? So we want to keep on to the past. Then we are constantly thinking about future. What am I going to do when I retire? What am I going to do? When am I going to get my children educated? Get them married. Then get the grandchildren. Play with the grandchildren. And then die happily ever after. So I'm constantly either worrying about the past or worrying about the future. Now I'm going to change the words. Okay? Worrying about the past, we'll call it attachment. It is holding on to something that's already gone. And you can't change it. It's gone. It's past. We'll call the future desire. Different word, but just listen carefully. So either we are living in the world of attachment or desire. Both of them are impossible. Because what is gone cannot be changed. What is not here is not in our control. And therefore, when the two ropes are pulling you from either side, what happens to the person in the middle? Anger, frustration, depression, jealousy. All the bad emotions. And therefore, if you try to get rid of the anger, the jealousy, the hatred, all the bad emotions that are here now, you will never succeed. You need to understand what is the cause of it. The cause of it is that you are holding on to the two ropes. They are not holding on to you. You are holding on to them. All you have to do is let go. There is a beautiful example that's given in the ancient scriptures. You know how they catch monkeys in India to have it as a showpiece on the side street? It's a very interesting thing. Even if you know it, it's worth listening. They go to the jungle where the monkeys are in the tree. They take a flask which has a narrow neck and a big bottom, and the head, the mouth is wide, then the neck is narrow, and the bottom is wide. They dig a hole in the ground, they bury the flask in the ground up to neck deep. So you can't pull the flask up because it's buried neck deep. They take a handful of peanuts and they put it into the flask while monkeys are watching, and they walk away. Now the monkey sees that there is peanuts in that hole. So monkey comes from the tree, puts the hand in the hole, grabs the handful of peanuts. Now the neck of the flask is too narrow, he can't get the hand out. Now he's stuck. The guy comes, hits the hand with the stick until it's painful for him to let go of the peanut. By this time, he's already a prisoner. So the question is, who imprisoned the monkey? Himself. All he has to do is let go of the peanut. So my father always used to say, every time we did something, he would say, "That's okay, let go of the penis. It's not anybody else who is making you miserable. You are making yourself miserable. Let go." So if we want to be free of these demons, we need to let go of the ropes that we are holding on to, of the desire and attachment. It's all up to us. Nobody out there is making us do this. Nobody out there is making us suffer. Nobody out there is responsible for our own shortcomings. If there was somebody out there responsible for our shortcomings, that means we are prisoners. We have no escape. We are slaves. Which is not true. We are all given a freedom of choice. We have a choice. We can choose to walk away. That's what Buddha was taught by this example. He said, don't tighten your string of the instrument so tight that they break, nor keep them so loose that they don't make any music. You need to find that medium, that middle ground, where you learn to let go and yet find the happiness within.
I don't know,
the end
is it's
only for, but not if you are expecting something in return.
No.
If you are